Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Over the past few years, since this nation has refocused its attention on race, at every level of society, there's a new spirit of seeking candor. Even anger over so-called political correctness is an acknowledgement that the old rules of passive complacency about race don't seem to work anymore. We've found that this re-examination can be most powerful in one-to-one conversations. Our series, Uncomfortable Truths, Confronting Racism in America, has curated some great examples already, and you've joined in. Jessica Shirak in Minneapolis emailed us with a story about her good friend Tiffany Wilson Worsley. Jessica is white, Tiffany is black. A few years ago, Jessica asked Tiffany, who she knew from a previous job, to meet her at a local coffee shop in northern Minneapolis, a predominantly black part of the city. Jessica wanted to leap over a frustrating barrier that keeps people of different races in different worlds in this country. Jessica had questions.
Tiffany was very open, and she told me, you know, I come from this predominantly black neighborhood, and I have parents who don't like white people. And somehow I felt upset that her parents wouldn't like white people, and it made me feel a little defensive. How could they not like white people? But, you know, I guess I keep thinking of this word tracks, like we're on different tracks. We live in different neighborhoods. We work at different places. We have different people for bosses, and we have different friend groups. And so I guess I felt like racially a little defensive, but it was also the start of feeling really curious about her life.
When I initially said that, and which is still true, I did let her know that when my parents refer to white people, they still use the other word.
The C word?
The C word that I cannot even say in the grocery store anymore because it's so jaded.
Crackers.
There it is.
Yeah.
So my parents still use that to refer to white people, and that's because the historical context is my mother was raised on the farm majority of her life, doing all of those ugly things, you know, to please the servants and, you know, the maids and things like that. And so although we're in 2017 and we live an entirely different lifestyle now, I think those memories are still resonate in my parents' mind. So when they say, hey, look at those crackers over there, they're not saying, oh, I hate them, but it's just that's them. They have no dealings with us. And that's a reality to me that I try to deal with even with my parents and some of my friends. And I think that's the kind of the temperament that I also lead with this work, is that we understand that certain ideologies still persist and consist in this day and time. And it's still live and real.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, as someone who grew up with family who said things about people who weren't white without knowing anybody who wasn't white, that there's an ideology that's really deep-seated.
Yep.
And that they're not aware of it. They just know they don't like certain people. And it's shocking that people would say those things, think those things, without having any direct experience. We went to a conference at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and it was the National Center on Difficult Dialogues conference. And we talked about living room conversations. And we were able to simulate a conversation on race with a really diverse group of people. And we had a great time. But it was also hard to be in a room of people who mostly weren't white and talk about having these cross-racial dialogues and feel challenged. What an example of a time where it got a little weird for me, but then I understood what other people's experiences must be like was when I was talking about something, but the black women in the room looked at Tiffany and addressed Tiffany for follow-up questions. They didn't necessarily address me. That's probably the experience of a lot of people of color in America every day.
After that experience, we were going to dinner that night.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were walking in the door, you said you needed a break. You need to go for a walk. And it was in that moment I thought of the pressure that you were or had experienced, and you needed to walk it off. And I thought to myself, I don't get that opportunity to do that. Mm. I can't, because this is my reality. And so that has been one thing that I've been thinking about, but never intentionally like got into until now.
Yeah.
I just didn't think me and white women had a lot in common. I think because I put them all in this one bucket of passive women who didn't have much to say and or contribute outside of beauty and hair. And when I think of white women, it's just beauty. And I don't know if that's because that's how society lifts them, you know, because they're always the models, or look at what she has on, or, you know, she's size 4, the long hair, the straight long hair, because mine is not straight. So, of course, I always gravitate to those things that are obviously much more different than us. So as I began to do the living room conversations, I began to see her nose. I began to see the color of her hair, which meant I began to listen when she talked. So when she talked about her relationships, when she talked about her beautiful marriage and her beautiful daughter, I began to see my auntie and my cousins, when they talk about their beautiful marriages and their children, also her work. I already thought Jessica was a strong woman. So to hear her talk about her work and how she moved around in her work, it was just like, she is just like me. Now, I can honestly say I don't know that I hold that for still all white women. I need more white women friends. But for Jessica, I think she was a little bit more easier for me to see because I had already pegged her as someone who was strong and hardworking, and she cared about her appearance. And obviously those things are big for me, and I don't know why, but they are.
So can I bring up the hair thing? You mentioned it, the long straight hair.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot of things, and these, they might seem silly, but they weren't silly to me. I learned that black women sometimes, if they get their hair done for a particular kind of event, they might sleep sitting up in a chair because they don't want to ruin their hair, because it's important that it looks good the next day. Tiffany might, I mean, has a lot of familiarity with that, but I didn't know that. And it seems like a small detail of life, but it lets you know that we are having really different experiences in daily details of how we go about our lives. And it was really surprising to me that there were small things like that that I didn't know, like how to care for your hair, that every black woman is going to know, but most white women will not know. I didn't know that black women wore wigs. I had no idea. And then I went to Tiffany's apartment, and she had wigs at her house. And I was like, whoa, what's going on here? I don't know white women who have wigs. But now I know that small detail, but it helps me understand life just a teeny bit more from somebody else's perspective. And I think about other white women who are going to go through their lives having only white women friends and not knowing at all what it's like for someone who's not white to just get around in the world, to be in the world. And I think that is too bad for them.
That's Jessica Shurack and Tiffany Wilson Worsley. Now they are both participating in Living Room Conversations, a guided conversation project about helping people connect with others with differing perspectives. And we're grateful they were a part of our series, Uncomfortable Truths. If you want to take part in our series, well, we'd love to hear from you. Visit thetakeaway.org/truths. Tell us how you could bridge racial divides in your world by having a conversation. Could be with a family member, a friend, or a coworker. We'll review your submission, and if we select your story, we'll set everything up to record your conversation. Again, visit us at thetakeaway.org/truths to sign up. That's all from us. Keep bridging those divides, one conversation at a time. That's our mission. Thanks for joining us. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.